And welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. And today I do mean everyone, because we have a jam-packed call on our Skype channel going today. We have not one guest, but two guests today, leading to a total of four people that you're going to hear today. So it might be a little bit chaotic. There might be a little bit more talking over each other than we usually are used to, but I think that we'll get some wacky and interesting ideas, because we've got two folks who have been in the video game industry in some way before, and folks from the lovely continent of Europe. So let's go ahead and introduce, I suppose, ourselves first, just so we can kind of get our own names out there.
Why not?
My name is Ryan Heyman. You can call me H, as always.
And I'm Ryan Quintel. You can call me Q.
And joining us today, we have from the Kane and Rinse stable, the familiar voice, if you're a fan of that show, Mikhail Kroeder.
Hey, hello.
And an associate of his that I guess they've been friends for about 10 years or so. This is Hans Nichelle.
Hi, HQ. Thanks for having me.
Hans, I love that you became an associate. It sounds like a bodyguard of sorts. Like, this is my associate. He comes with me. He holds the handcuffed briefcase.
I am somewhat of a bodyguard, if that's correct.
Mikhail looks like he could stand up for himself, though. He's a pretty well-built guy.
Yeah, I'm looking, you know, me and Hans were aspiring game developers. I'm looking forward to that moment where we're getting our first death threats, you know, so...
Yeah. Yes, finally.
So I'm interested. So why don't we take some time to introduce the two of you to the audience and kind of go over some of your history with games, and not only the work that you've done in the games industry, but also I know that Mikhail, at least, we've had a lot more time to interact with each other on the Kane and Rinse podcast. And on that show, you've kind of hammered out your own niche as like one of the go-to guys for real old school arcade games, and you know, the real kind of blisteringly hard score chaser type of games. And why don't you talk about your interests and work in the industry?
That's a very weird moment to think of where to start. But I guess I rolled into the industry as a game reviewer for the Dutch version of GamePro magazine. Mm. And I did that for about a year, in which I really started hating to play video games. Because it's that moment where you realize, you know, it seems like a dream at first, like you're making a hobby into your work. But it's that point where you get just a pile of games on your desk and you have to play them for a deadline and write about them. But... as a hobbyist video games lover and player, you usually have your own discriminate picks, right? Like what you want to play and what you want to invest time in. So it came to a point to where it felt like an obligation to play certain games that I would have normally never chosen to play. When I would come home, I would see my consoles and I would just start associating them with work. So, yeah, but I did stay working on in the game industry after that, and but more from inside. I worked for a startup company that was using the Commodore license to create new products. And after that, I started working for Nintendo of Europe. I did that for about 5.5 years in a role as a content manager and online project manager. After that, I worked for a brief stint for Microsoft, and now I'm a free agent. And one of the main things that I'm doing is localization of video games. So, but I think that, you know, when I started working at Commodore and Nintendo, I really found my stride working within the game industry, because I was no longer required to play certain games for my work, but I could still work with games and write about them and create content around them. So I really started to become more passionate about video games more than ever, actually, during that time period.
It's interesting. And then these days, if you just have a free afternoon and you don't have to play anything for the Kane and Rince podcast, what will you sit down with? What is your go-to type of game?
Fighting games a lot, I guess. Playing a lot of Street Fighter V recently, also with some of the Kane and Rince community. We have our Tuesday night battle lounges. also slowly making my way through 2016's Doom still. It's such a rush of a game, but for some reason I can't play it very long after another because it gets very intense for a first person shooter to me. The genres that I love most are probably 2D platformers, fighting games, and 2D shooters as well. 2D shoot 'em ups. So yeah, that's my comfort food, and that's something usually that those kind of 2D shooters, for example, there are also games you can just play for a quick half hour and get your fix of all the action and excitement you need for that time period, and just do something else and perhaps more productive again after that.
2D shooty.
Yeah. Like it. Exactly.
And then Hans, what is your background in the games world?
So in the actual gaming industry, my history there is a lot shorter than Michiel's. The only time when I was working in the gaming industry proper was when Michiel and I met. That was at Nintendo of Europe in 2008, 10 years ago. I was doing an internship there, online marketing content stuff. So at some point I was responsible for the website Wii.com. I was really proud of that because that was amazing.
Oh yeah, just to, I remember that. Yeah,
just having that website under my control as an intern, that was amazing. That was the only time that I actually worked in the gaming industry. Nowadays, I am a professional Unity developer, but not for games, but for business software. So I work at a German business software company. A fairly huge one. And we have a couple of teams that do more of experimental stuff. And augmented reality is one of the big things that we do there. And that's where I come in with Unity development. So I'm doing the same things that a game developer would do professionally, but not with the same results. But I am a hobby indie game developer, or aspiring, I should say, because it's really hard to find the time or to find money to actually do that stuff professionally.
Yes. yeah. Me and Hans, we started out in 2013, thinking, hey, let's start creating video games. We started out under the brave nomer of HITP, or Hard in the Paint Studios. And I guess by now we could call ourselves, we could rename our fictional studio name to Struggle Games, I guess.
Because
daily life just gets so much in the way and trying to make a living and trying to provide for ourselves and our families.
Exactly.
It's just rough to dedicate the time it actually needs to creating a video game.
Yeah. So we have a couple of other people that also help us there. We have two 3D modelers, animators. We had a marketing guy at some point who vanished somehow, but still we're trying to get there someday. It's still the dream, but it's hard. So we're still making plans. And aside from trying to make games, of course I play games a lot as well. I have some of the same tastes that Michiel does have with the 2D platformers and stuff, but also fighting games. I've been a huge player of Street Fighter 4. I spend a lot of time in Japan over the years and try to go to the arcades every day. But nowadays Street Fighter is dead. You heard it here. So I'm playing Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Yeah, Dragon Ball FighterZ is the new hotness now, isn't it?
And Dragon Ball FighterZ is it's the best fighting game. It's absolutely amazing. Everybody is playing it, people from all the scenes, even non-fighting game players like Smash players are playing the getting into Dragon Ball Fighters.
Okay, well, let's not burn any bridges.
No, I'm just kidding, of course. But everybody that has
so our first pitch is Super Smash. Oh, damn.
Well, let's get into some of these video game pitches. Let's create some original video game ideas and see where we can take this. Mikhail, would you like to start us off today?
Yeah, sure. And that makes for the most natural segue that I've experienced in a long while, because I'm actually pitching a Smash-like video game.
Oh, perfect.
My idea is for a game called The 16 Champions. Yeah, it's nothing too wild or crazy in comparison to a lot of the other guys ideas you guys usually come up with. But I've always been wondering, like, if you look at, for example, Smash Brothers, the competitive scene loves to play in stages with minimal stage hazards, right? Or none at all. Mm-hmm. And turn off items and all sorts of shenanigans introducing elements. But I've always been wondering how it would be to create a game like that, but which is actually balanced around interactive stages and stage hazards. So what you would end up with is a 2D, in my mind at least, it's a 2D fighter, perhaps also for up to four players in large interactive stages, but where the main goal of the players is, of course, to deplete each other's health bars, but instead of melee combat being the most effective way to do that is to use certain interactive stage elements. So think, for example, a huge castle wall with a pot of melting hot liquid on top of it, and other and maybe ballistas on the side. So this, if you could conquer such a vantage point and use those interactables against your opponents, that would be you would have a very large chance to actually win the match that way. So instead of the hand-to-hand being the main focus of this fighting game, it would be to try and actually fight and jostle for position in this game. So it's not entirely dissimilar to most fighting games, that it's about control of the stage, right, and space control. But it being very literally about conquering areas and using certain advantages that are always there in the same place, so there's no really not really a randomized element about it, to basically gain the largest advantage and win the match. And I thought of the name The 16 Champions because if you usually, and this is something that if you've listened to Kane and Rince, and in particular the Golden Axe episode, I've decried that so much heroic fantasy, or so much fantasy themes in video games, are now kind of governed by the whole Tolkien-esque heroic sword and sorcery type fantasy themes, right? So I'm actually, I would go for my more primal Conan the Barbarian type of theme with lizard people and half-naked muscular barbarians and the likes, and this sort of savage theme to it, in which 16 crazy champions from all over this fantastical world come together to fight it out. So yeah, you would have to, of course, to have your really bizarre sorcerers and cult leaders and characters, and the Robert E. Howard sort of stable of characters and character design, and I think that would fit very well, kind of similar to the 16-bit fighter Weapon Lord, if that says something to you.
Let's go ahead and give ourselves the 10 minutes to talk about that. We'll start the clock here.
I know for me personally, when I heard the Conan the Barbarian theme and I started thinking about, massive oiled people and skull shields and when you mention Weapon Lord, that's that's kind of where my mind goes. But
yeah,
I love the theme and the way that you could place this in exotic locations, and of course those locations, if you think about the sort of crudeness of the technology at the time, would really make sense to have all these sort of elaborate traps for these fantasy beasts placed all over the environment.
So the challenge that I see in this particular game is this is essentially like a fighting game where stage hazards are king of the match. Whoever is able to to trick their opponent into stage hazards, they will gain the advantage. But how do we create something that doesn't favor the people who are like immensely familiar with the matches, because that would be really hard to kind of induce new players into mm-hmm. this, because then they'll spend the majority of their time losing because they don't know the layouts of the stages. And you could do like a semi randomized stages, kind of like you would find in a Spelunky, using a lot of those same types of traps and stuff, but then it would still heavily favor the people who know the language of the design.
Yeah, but I think that's inevitable when you're creating a fighting game. Like,
yeah, that's
isn't
fair.
It?
Yeah, although, like we talked about earlier, Dragon Ball FighterZ has a lot of really good kind of introductory elements. It kind of eases you into, you know, from mashing buttons and still giving you some level of control and freedom in that, into the more complex play really subtly and making sure that nobody feels bad at the game right. at any stage.
I think the key part would be that the fighting system itself, the hand-to-hand, would be fairly straightforward. It wouldn't be huge combo base. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the way I described it in the original document was something similar to the Samurai Showdown games with big hits rather than long complex combos. Or mm-hmm. maybe you could even say a 2D version of Dark Souls. Hey, the Dark Souls mentions that.
You know, like trust.
Like just because Dark Souls it gets a lot of praise for its combat, but it's a fairly simple system when you think about it. You know, it's almost rock paper scissors like. So yeah, mm-hmm. think dodge rolls, think thrust blocks or parries and guards. And yeah, maybe you could even have a little stamina meter up there. So you would actually, it would be even more of an advantage to seek out the traps and manipulate them to your advantage, especially when you're running out of stamina.
You could even argue that you could remove the traditional fighting game combat completely. Just use the stage hazards, right?
I'm frankly a bit struggling with that idea, because there was also a PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, right? Where the only way to KO your opponents would be to use a super on them, which made doing regular damage to them almost completely irrelevant. So that didn't really work for me.
Neither did it work for PlayStation All-Stars.
Key would probably be to learn your character's movement, and B, learn the stages. And I think a good training mode would be fine for that, certainly, as long as the fighting itself would be fairly simple. My main challenge that I see myself, sorry if I'm not letting you guys ask your question.
No.
The main challenge I see myself would actually try to find an audience for this game, because interactive stages are so much associated with imbalanced games and imbalanced game elements.
Yeah, they're divisive. So
I think it would be very hard to actually find people who would want to play this game competitively.
I think one of the interesting aspects of the game balance wise would be that you sort of have like say mini King of the Hill situations there. Say
battles.
You have that one really good thing on top of a tower or whatever, and you manage to capture it, and of course you're in a better position than everybody else after you did that. But then everybody's going to be gunning for that position as well, right? And so either you leave it mm-hmm. and give up your advantage, or people storm in and kill you. So that could be really interesting.
Yeah. So I was gonna say, one of the great things to inspire this type of gameplay for me is something like a Dota or Heroes of the Storm, where yes, there are key points on this map or this stage where you want to hold them, but it does purposely put you in a pretty exposed position. And maybe even if you did four player, you could do, you know, two and two, right? Have one person go and try and hold the position while the other person is trying to duke it out and stave off the other two people coming in. I love the idea of a fighting game that is not entirely based on speed of the fight, right? If it's a little slower, if it's a little bit more deliberate, I think you could probably, there's some audience there that's just like, look, I'm never going to be fast enough to execute these rolling around the D-pad combos that I can't ever seem to do in Street Fighter, and kind of learn timing and weapons and characters and really invest down one of those trees based on a slower timing-based system more than a combo
system. Sounds like the execution barrier is going to be a lot lower than with traditional fighting games,
I think so. I think the execution would be more on the onus of stage navigation, so you could have some like swashbuckling elements of grabbing ropes and swinging to the other side of the stage as well in there, for example, for crossing distances that your character's normal jump wouldn't be able to make and those kind of things.
You can have kind of a rock, paper, scissors layout to a lot of these stages as well, where you would have one tall tower, which gives you, of course, like a really good kind of control and range over the battlefield, but it leaves you exposed to a ballista or like a mounted bow and arrow type thing on the ground.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't want to be up exposed on the tower while somebody's down there. And then maybe there's a tunnel underneath the map. So that is... you know, the people that are out that mounted turret would be susceptible to people coming up from underneath them. But then the guys underground are worried about cave-ins, which you can trigger from above the ground. So, you know, a lot of these different always shifting priorities depending on where everybody else is.
That's, I think, one of the more interesting ways to think about the design of this is any point that has a advantage or a possible trap or something to spring on your opponents also has a counterpoint in another part of the stage. Right, so you could see, oh, you made it to the point, but then you see the other team start funneling towards the counter and you know you can't hold that point forever, so you have to abandon it or else suffer real major damage.
I think you got it right there. And I was also thinking about of certain stage events. For example, if you use a very primitive cannon with huge blasts, maybe you awaken a monster from its slumber, which breaks through the stage at one point, you know, if you use it too much, those kind of things. So it's like a stage event, but it's actually activated by certain conditions. And
it's kind of like a split second in a way, that racing game that Disney put out a few years ago where you would trigger traps on the stage. It was all set up like it was a movie set.
Yeah,
and
I love
you're racing
game.
Around this course and you could trigger traps, and that would not only trigger like potentially damages to the other players, like explosions and, you know, crushing the other cars, but it would also like change the race course because now this airplane isn't in the way anymore because it exploded, so there's a shortcut you can take for the next lap.
Or the parking garage caved in and all of a sudden you're right on the lower floor. Yeah, I love that game. Good call. Yeah.
We either have to find a way, it's called 16 champions or whatever, to release it with only 12 champions and get people to pay for DLC or have 16 champions and start making
it
17, 18.
It does really close
18.
The door for
I would never do that. You know why I chose the number 16?
Why is that?
Because I think it's a good starting point for a fighting game roster. If you look at Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, the final incarnation of Street Fighter 2 before it before 2017's Ultra Street Fighter 2, it had 16 selectable characters, and a secret one.
It'd be interesting, creating characters is different in this scenario than in a lot of other fighting games because it seems like the actual fighting itself isn't the most important part of controlling the rounds. Rather, it seems like navigation and positioning are the most important. So how do you, you know, balance people around that? Maybe you have people that control their movement a lot more diversity in that than people have firmer constitutions, maybe that wouldn't get knocked off after a first arrow or so it more kind of like balancing like tower fall.
Yeah, so you could have also heavier fighters that have more armor properties, and they can can hold their position more effectively.
I know this is tough to pull off in a fighting game, but we do have fighting games like Injustice and further back Soul Calibur that attempt to do some level of customization. I wonder if it's so much based around the weapon and the timing and the stage, if this isn't a great game to consider letting you have some level of actual visual control and customization over the way your character looks, because so much of it could be, you know, you doing battle in this sort of ethereal plane of you know, fictionalized ancient times that doesn't necessarily like. The thing that the other player really needs to read from you is your weapon and your timing and what they see from that. They're like, okay, this is an axe character. I'm going to deal with that. And you almost take like a Monster Hunter type of approach with the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, this could be an idea, definitely.
And with that, we are out of time. We hold ourselves to a time limit because, of course, we could keep going on forever and ever because ideas are always further iterable. It's not the best way to say that. But, but you know, we have to cut ourselves off at some point, and we like to throw it back to the community. If they have anything they would like to add to this, then please do get in contact with us. We have a ton of ways that you can add to any of the ideas that we've done before, and just kind of keep the conversation going. You know, we don't want to be the definitive final stamp on a finished product. We want it just to be a little bit of inspiration that people can take with them throughout the week. We already have a name for that one, so that makes this part of the show a lot easier. So this is the 16 Champions. Way to go. Coming up with the names is always the hardest part. That's what we really struggle with sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys came up with some really good creative names over the course of the show. True.
Yeah, because Ryan does a good job. Sorry, H does a good job of cutting out him and I stammering.
We edit that process down quite significantly.
Nice.
And I know Michiel initially said that we're not likely to make this game, but now I want to make it. It sounds great.
That's the danger of this show, is that it always feels so much more. It's like you really want to. You're invested in the project now. All right. Well, let's. How about I'll go next, and we can kind of get a guest sandwich on this one. We can close out with Hans, and so what I'll introduce here. This is less gameplay focused and more focused on just a super weird idea. And so we'll see what kind of gameplay opportunities we can build out from this. This is a ragdoll style game where you drag this little character around these rooms with your mouse, kind of like a mount your friends type thing. So it's meant to be kind of wacky. It's meant to be very kind of loosey-goosey ragdoll type of goofy environment. But you're essentially in a Truman Show style sitcom. And so you can drag this person, you know, by their head to move them around the scene, or you can drag their limbs individually to make them interact with things or to move. But basically, you are judged, you're scored based on how funny the audience finds the show and the different types of scenarios that you engage in. Maybe there's storylines that this little ragdoll character has to complete, you know, for a specific episode. You think of it like a Seinfeld type thing. So, you know, you would have to go and order Chinese food in one episode. And so you'd have to drag your little guy down to the shop. And depending on how your interactions go, maybe you're a very slapstick character. Maybe you're a character who engages in other forms of comedy. There would be Dark Souls-like invasions from other players. And so this would be somebody else coming into the scene, and you would have this limited form of a ragdoll interaction that way. And you just have to kind of play off of what each other kind of put forward. So I don't know how this is going to go, but let's give ourselves 10 minutes to talk about this ragdoll sitcom.
So when you say ragdoll, am I correct in thinking of something like Gang Beasts?
Yeah, kind of.
That's kind of oddly controlled.
Right, yeah, I think Mount Your Friends is a really good starting point for this, where you've got, it's kind of a 2D side-on thing, and you basically just like control one limb at a time, or just, you know, moving your character around. But it's meant to be, you don't have like tons and tons and tons of control. It's meant to be a little clumsy in that like Octodad kind of way.
Yeah, I like this idea, because these kinds of awkward mechanics are usually already played for laughs, right?
Yeah, so those games are already funny. If you play Gang Beasts with a couple of people, it's hilarious. It never works the way you intend to move.
Yeah, so to center this whole idea around a reality or Truman Show-like sitcom is very inspired, I feel.
Could do a Jackbox game like thing where you have multiple people joining the audience and judging the performances against each other, and I don't know, a new player coming in and stealing your thunder. And
could be really good for streaming as well.
Oh yeah, sure,
that's a good idea.
Twitch integration.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of the judging system, how that would work. I guess that could be quite tricky. Or how serious would you plan on taking it? Would you want to surprise if that would already, the judging system would already be part of the comedy itself, you could not take it very seriously at all.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that I would want some level of taking the scoring system seriously, because if it was just, you would get some laugh track whenever something funny happened, like the novelty of that wears off pretty quickly. So you need some sort of a goal to work towards.
Yeah.
You know, and variable levels of feedback along the way.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking maybe your character is the only one, your character and then whoever like invades your world, so to speak, is the only one who's like a goofy floppy ragdoll. And then everybody else is just kind of like a somewhat normal NPC having regular conversations. So kind of like Octodad, how you are the odd man out.
Yeah.
And so you can you have these kind of straight men actors to play off of. And you have regular types of situations where you are kind of a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, because on one hand, if you incorporate a very loosey-goosey scoring system that almost seems random, you can lose player investment. But if you make it too strict of a judging system or scoring system, it might also invoke frustrations in the player because of the ragdoll physics nature of the whole thing.
Yeah.
So you would probably have to strike a very nice and fine balance there, I think, in the scoring system. But I like that idea, because that a good scoring system would elevate it from being a pure novelty that you would play for a little while and then just maybe not really touch again.
With something so loose, it's probably difficult to achieve specific interactions like that in the same way that a regular scoring-based game would be, because everything is so subjective as to what is funny and what isn't, that, you know, you could spend the entire game just spamming a very funny action, throwing a coffee mug all across the but that doesn't represent what people actually want when they're watching a show, which is variety. And so I think emphasizing variety, kind of like Rock Band VR is you're just kind of strumming along, you're creating the rhythm track for all these different songs instead of playing like a regular like Rock Band notes. You are strumming and creating a rhythm, but you're scored based on the variety of change-ups of the chords that you're playing and the stringing together combos of those. And so maybe a similar, you know, if you're able to like have, you know, five or six different types of comedy, slapstick and I don't know, doing things while somebody else isn't looking. I haven't really thought through what the types of comedy would be, but then you can kind of string together combos and keep the variety high. Otherwise, the audience will get bored.
Yeah, it could almost be a study of formulaic sitcom comedy in itself. Like,
you know,
formula one jokes. Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, because also not repeating the same thing over is also a staple of those extreme sports games that so little of which seem to come out nowadays anymore.
But you should get a high score for coining a good running gag, though.
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
yes.
That's a good point. Yeah, and callbacks. Yeah. And the longer that you're able to go before a callback. And then also, if you're following like the arc of an episode, then where you hit certain beats would be important. And sometimes maybe even having those like those touching moments like you would get in a sitcom, like you know, the Full House,
when
dad goes up to talk to the daughter who's sad in her room. Yeah.
You know, I think another way of looking at this thing is actually a tool of how we do some types of usability testing in software, which is there'll be a system set up that before you can kind of create your own. Let's say these things aren't necessarily long form, they're bite-sized or whatever. Before you create your own, we're going to show you three things to give a scale of 1 to 5 on, you know? So then you have a user rate system that flows right into the user create system. So it's like you see 5 things for every 1 thing you make, or you see 2 things for every 1 thing you make. And then you have a virtuous loop where the users are kind of rating the community as they go.
You could even do like a character build system, like in an RPG, where you have like certain skills that each of your characters has. So maybe, you know, whether it's tied to a radial menu that you get from a right click instead of a left click, or whether it's a bar of skills at the bottom of the screen, like you would see in an MMO or a CRPG. but you have, you know, your character has a build, like certain actions that this character can do, like maybe a, like a Tim Allen grunt or a fart or a just whatever your style of comedy is. Then you can kind of go down certain skill trees almost.
Man, if you could have generic sort of copyright free versions of weird sitcom tropes, like a neighbor that shows up with a crazy haircut, you know, that would be a great way of handling some of this stuff. Like, we all, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, know what's going on here.
Yeah. Comedy accents.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you had a whole little stable of ragdolls you can drag in. So you've got the nerd, the Urkel character, you've got the Jerry Seinfeld, kind of the main one. You got, yeah, it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I also love the idea of maybe even thinking that the users, while they record this, have some, maybe a snippet of their own like sound effect that they can record or add into things of their own laughs and groans. That kind of skirts you from like worrying about including that stuff on the in the build of the game itself, and it's like, hey, we didn't add Tim Allen's grunt to this game. Somebody else did.
It would probably quickly descend into VR chat levels of creepiness, probably, but could be very fun.
Yeah. It's probably true.
Yeah. One of the things I keep thinking about when I hear this is it's almost marionette performance in a way. Right, H? Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Because I one of my favorite cinematic moments of a true wonderful film, Team America: World Police, is the fight scene where you have these two marionettes that are very dramatic music. There's a huge setup, and then of course they just kind of wiggle at each other because that's all these things can do. So I love the idea of trying to, you know, different creators saying, hey, I'm not going to go for the Seinfeld thing. I'm going to go for like Law and Order SVU, but I'm going to have the detective kind of wiggle onto set.
That could be really fun, doing just different kind of genres of shows. Yeah. Or maybe on one episode per season, you have like a very special episode, not necessarily like the Don't Take Drugs one, although that could be fun as well. But the types of episodes where they would go to like, now we're stranded on an island, or, you know, now we are spies in the USSR, and, you know, this type of thing where you're out of the regular context and you have to use the tools that you have in a much different context.
What if you could download shared episodes by other people and do crossover
Steam
episodes?
Ooh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think of what scenarios you could do with the flashback episodes.
Yeah. When we were all younger and in different scenarios. Everyone had different haircut. That's all the flashbacks ever equate to on TV, right? Is everyone has a different haircut.
Yeah, or it's usually just a filler episode where they just reuse a lot of old content.
Yeah,
the clip show, that would be a great, like almost like a WarioWare, like you're in a clip show like The Simpsons would have every season, and you just have to like figure out what's going on in the situation very quickly and then adapt and react to it. Anyways, we're out of time on that one. There's I feel like it's just starting to unfurl almost, and we're getting we just kind of crossed a threshold that has tons of possibilities, but we have to leave it right there for now. We have to come up with a name now. I didn't come in with anything, but maybe something like Ragdolls in the City.
that feels traditional, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, we can leave it there. And if anybody else has a better idea, then they know how to get in contact with us. Now, let us go back to our guests. This is Hans coming in with I don't know what you have. Let's see your sleeves.
Yeah. All right. So a little bit of background about the idea. So like most people, I'm a huge fan of the Final Fantasy games. But unlike most people, I know for a fact that Final Fantasy XII has the best combat system of them all. So in the lead up to the recent re-release, of the PS4 version. I think the PC version is out now as well, but before the PS4 mm-hmm. version came out, I was kind of trying to get some information about what changed and whatnot. And I was watching some YouTube videos, and some YouTuber, I unfortunately don't remember which video it was, he was talking about the Gambit system of Final Fantasy XII. I don't know how familiar you are with it. So basically what you do is you can program your characters to act autonomously. They have simple rules like, say one of your character's health goes below 50%, another character drops them a potion, or if an enemy is healing another enemy, then target that healing enemy first, and things like that. And what this YouTuber said was, when your party is properly configured, you have a killing machine rolling through the field. And immediately ideas came popping into my head of taking that concept a little bit more literal. So have a machine, say a large tank or a hovercraft, or might be a ship on sea or something, that has various configurable, for the sake of easily explaining that, call them towers, like in a tower defense game. So you have this machine with weapon installations on top of it, and you can program those little weapons with those Gambit type AI, would be calling it too much, but those rules, right? Say you have a little tower that shoots some projectiles, and if enemies come close to you, then you will always target the weakest enemies first, or you will target the flying enemies first, something like that. So you have this machine with the towers, and you can move the machine around. So that's what you actually do during gameplay. You change the positioning and maybe the rotation of your machine. So I'm thinking probably 2D top-down, that would be easiest to do. Mm-hmm. Could also be a fully 3D game, but that would make it worse, probably, or too complicated. So you have this machine moving around, and it might lend itself good to PvP type situations as well, where both players have different differently configured machines, and you maneuver around each other and have your little Gambit configured towers fight. But it could also be something like, it's like a moving tower defense game. So you have your traditional lanes with creeps and whatnot, but instead of placing your towers on the ground, you have to drive the towers to where you want them to be. So the whole skill set required for the game is twofold. One is programming, quote unquote, your towers, and the other would be moving around and getting into good positioning. Maybe a height difference could also be playing a role.
Yeah, we will start the clock there. This is really interesting because when you said that these robots that you're controlling have towers on top, that kind of changed the way that I viewed this, because, you know, you think about having towers on top of these buildings, and then you think of the scale of these things and how enormous they are. And I was really interested in exploring further if these things are these huge, almost like city-sized robots that are kind of coming up against each other, have these big weapons, then you can almost have like a game that functions on two scales at once. So like you have teams of two players going up against teams of two players. And so one player is controlling this giant robot and all of the defenses. And then the other player maybe plays like a small human-sized character who's has like a jetpack and can fly over to the other robots and engage with the reverse tower defense mode, where you're trying to break mm-hmm. in, where you're trying to infiltrate the other character. Maybe you're leading groups of fighters, kind of like a MOBA, where you have your main guy and then you've got groups of kind of disposable minions as well that are helping to fight off these towers and to get inside this enormous machine, kind of like the Death Star run or something like that.
Wow, it's completely different, but it sounds so cool.
I also started thinking exactly like Ryan about the theme of this, because you mentioned tanks in the beginning. Ryan was saying robots, but I'm also just seeing this sort of like, you know, the Miyazaki movie Howl's Moving Castle, like this huge building with all, you know, and it should be completely customizable, I think, like the way you want it to look and where you want your towers to place and how you program and what you make it look. And you can make these really gaudy, crazy storybook illustration types of moving buildings, basically.
That would be really interesting, especially because, you know, depending on your theme, I'm my brain is going all the way back to Heroes of Might and Magic 3 specifically, for whatever reason, whereas you kind of chose a class of people. And, you know, if you were genies or you were, humans or what, you would get a different looking architectural style to the whole thing. And so, and of course, that could like shoot out from there. Maybe you have these individual towers are all developed by a different type of technology or race. And of course, you have to adapt it into your core experience, depending on, you know, what you want. And that would also signal, if you wanted to do multiplayer, to other people, oh, this is that type of technology. You could visibly see it without having to wait to see how it reacts to things.
It'd be neat if each of these machines served the purpose of like a user's entire base in an RTS, where
exactly
unit production is based on the buildings that you have and stuff like that. But you could also balance in like civilian centers, like you would have in a Civilization game, where, you know, you are trying to build a society that can thrive economically as well. And so you need centers of business, and you need like it to deal with, I don't know how in depth, I don't know if it would get like full Sim City-ish, where you would have to deal with like how, where to
the plumbing,
you'd dispose of waste and stuff like that. Yeah, exactly.
Your lavatory system, you know, that needs to work properly as well.
It can be used defensively, yeah.
I think that's cool, because one of the things that they kind of struggle with back and forth on Star Trek The Next Generation is the fact that it's one of the first ships that Starfleet has that is not just pure Starfleet officers on it, right? There's also regular humans and person and like families and schools on there. So the way they think about defending those people or the consequences of losing those people change. Say it is a floating building or it's a giant mech. How do you think you manage kind of moving that around, or do these stay stationary in your mind, Hans?
I would think that during the like the main gameplay loop, you would just walk it around or drive it around like you would in any top-down 2D, say like in an RTS, or even simpler, just with a controller like an action RPG. So you would just move around, and all your towers or installations, since they are pre-programmed, they will just do their thing. So you only worry about positioning during gameplay. And then after you, like, say you lose a match and you analyze where your programming went wrong and you change your setups, and then you go back in and move around.
It'd be interesting if you were trying to give people some incentive to be mobile so that they'll encounter the enemies as well. If there were like resource spots across the map, and so, you know, your city can become a mining town if you plant yourself next to a mountain, but then you need you need trade, so you need to plant yourself next to a river, and you need livestock, and so you have to go to a different type of location. And so, you know, it's like you always have to make those decisions in Civilization, you know, what type of city do I want to build? But this need to be kind of everything and only having one base of operations might do a good job of incentivizing this this movement around the map.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot, because the simple act of playing the game would just be moving your mobile base around, because of all the environment factors, the environmental factors, and because of the programming, it would be much more complex than just the simple act of moving around in itself.
What you're doing is moving around, but there needs to go a lot of thought into your positioning. That's the idea behind it.
Yeah, you can even think about like getting the higher ground on enemies, or working with the terrain to your advantage. And so you got this main player who has both a city building experience and movement and combat, the heavy guns that are attached to this giant moving city. And I think it would be pretty easy to swap between those two tasks. And then potentially, again, other players who are more the support, like small unit sized players who can invade, who can scout around the map a lot quicker than the actual city could, who can communicate the presence of enemies, or who could infiltrate either unnoticed or guns blazing another city, and all these different interactions. Maybe there's even like barbarian cities, the people who are the NPC forces who these smaller types of cities that move around the map as well. Yeah, this could be a really interesting mobile RTS in a way.
Yeah, I'm really liking the sound of that. It's and it conjures up a lot of images. It speaks to my imagination.
I would definitely appreciate to some degree having something akin to, I don't know, if the giant mech or the giant city had like you would in the kind of a large vessel, kind of a almost a dodge move, or if there were parts of the environment, like not only do you want to defensively be by a river for one reason or another environmentally, but perhaps you have some of your towers that are powered by water that you want to use.
That really reminds me. I've been playing, last year I've been playing Steel Battalion on the original Xbox with that crazy, stupid 40-button controller. And that really invokes the sense of piloting this huge, hulking monstrosity around. And the dodge move is also a very slow and deliberate move, basically. It's like a sidestep kind of thing. It's not like a quick dodge in an action game or anything like that. And it's very tense, that moment where you have to pre-calculate your movement of this huge thing you're controlling already.
Yeah, it would give you more of a sense of control, but it doesn't necessarily get you away from like the large lumbering feeling of these, you know, giant machines.
Yeah.
When it comes to creating incentives to engage with other units in combat, one interesting game that I was interested in for a while is called Captain Forever Remix. And it's a space shooter where you build your ship with kind of like Banjo-Kazooie nuts and bolts style blocks that all attach to each other. And some of them have weapons on them. And so you're kind of building as you go. And as you destroy other spaceships, their ships become kind of like raw materials that you can use to expand onto yours. And so, you know, you can append, and then you have these weird, wacky shaped ships just based on how each of these different raw materials have been appended to your own. And so maybe if you use, if you're very combat focused in this game, as you are going out into conquering other cities, maybe their buildings would self-destruct, but the platforms that they existed on remain. And so you can kind of take it over, and now you have more room to build a bigger city, which makes you a bigger target, but it also gives you potentially more space to create things. And so you always have the choice, if you don't want to be combat focused, of building up and building higher and taller cities, but that gets more expensive and gets potentially more precarious, because just one bomb could take out a huge tower instead of, you know, if you have a larger platform, then everything is more spread out. You have less danger specifically if a bomb hit a particular spot. But you know, you're bigger, you're an easier target. Maybe you're slower. You have to conquer in that case. But anyways, that is all the time that we have on that one. Do we have a name for this game?
The game is called A Well-Oiled Killing Machine.
I like that. That's cool. That is our third game today. We're not going to the community today because we've got two members of the community on the show. So we will get back into the regular swing of things next week and have a community contribution as well. If you would like to have your own idea read out on the show, you could either, one, come on this show like today, or you can email us. That is playwrightcast@gmail.com. You can go to our website, playwrightcast.com, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast, and that is PLAYWRITECAST.
Yes, and special thanks to Protodome for that wonderful track, Hello World, off of the album Blue Noise. It's a very, very good album. You should go give it a listen.
And a huge thanks to our friends, McKeel and Hans, today. Would you like to, either individually or together, have anything that you would like to promote or draw attention to?
I think when we finally have something to show for, we'll shout it off the roofs, right, Hans?
That's what we'll do, yeah. It's going to be some time, but yep, for sure.
Yeah.
I'll gladly do an IOU, and then the second you guys have something you want to say, you come on, or we'll just echo it for you.
Yay, sounds good. Yeah,
very
do you
want
to point out any social media presence, or is that not super important?
not really right now. For me, maybe for Hans, it's different.
No, not at all.
I love it. Don't follow us. Just leave us alone while we sit here and actually do some work.
There's nothing to follow. Well, you could follow Michiel if you're interested in getting some translation work, because as he mentioned, he is a free agent. And he has a website, which is called
stay-on-target.com.
Exactly.
Nice.
Thanks so much for that, Hans.
Yeah. I mean, I know that you are a free agent. I'm not.
And thanks so much for having us on, guys. It was it's really,
absolutely.
Really fun, this sort
this
of thing.
This was really good. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for joining us. It's been a lot of fun. We always like to hear new voices.
It was fun.
Q, would you like to take us out of the show today with a miniature idea?
Sure. The mini idea this week is a Shadow of the Colossus style game where you have to tailor make cute outfits and put on makeup and wonderful accessories to giant beasts that roam the land.
Oh, that's funny. Almost like a, what is it? The elves and the cobbler or something like that, where the they would make the shoes in the middle of the night. That's funny. Anyways.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, we'll leave you with that. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.